570.
An LA sports icon.
Fred Rogan is here tonight.
Decades on your television covering Los Angeles sports.
Fred Rogan, huge in Los Angeles.
The Dean.
I'm the Dean.
Fred Rogan.
Weekdays before Petros and Money.
A USC All-American.
USC's Rodney Peet.
An NFL quarterback.
Absolutely perfectly delivered by Rodney
Peet.
Available on the iHeartRadio app or on AM570LASports.com.
This is Rogan and Rodney.
We continue, Fred Rogan, Rodney Peet on AM570 LA Sports. Later this hour, our friend Al Michaels, the voice of Sunday Night Football on NBC, will jump onto the show. Yesterday, the Dodgers had basically a memorial service for Tommy Lasorda out at the stadium. Al knew Tommy at the very beginning of their careers.
Uh-huh.
And we'll talk to Al about that, hear some of his memories, also talk about what to expect this weekend when we get together for the championship games, the NFC and the AFC. But this is a day of new beginnings for this country, as it is every time there is a new president elected. So it is a day for us to come together. And to do that and to provide that spirituality, there is only one man to turn to. It is our dear friend, Vic the Brick, with the Daily Haiku at 2. I wonder if he made one up today. I wonder if he didn't go with one of the masters, came up with his own special haiku today.
Only one way to find out, Fred.
Well, let's welcome Vic. Vic, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Fred. Good afternoon, Rodney Peet.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, KFIC.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones and the twos in for Ronnie Fascio. Double A, Adam Oslin.
Shusha.
Look at me, I am cavelling.
Yes.
With the inauguration day.
Yes.
Come together right now.
Sing it, baby.
Over Joe and Kamala.
Okay.
Joe's speech was so brilliant. I am calling it the greatest inauguration speech I have ever heard. And I remember when I was a young briquette growing up in Queens, and I heard John F. Kennedy's inauguration speech. I believe Joe's transcended even JFK, in that we are in such tumult and crisis, and he is such a steady hand of healing. And he just put it out there and was beautiful. Joe was beautiful. And I just feel good. I just feel so good. I know the nation, the fabric, what was just a January 6th was ripped apart. We show us our bamboo quality in this country, how we can bounce back. And democracy lives. And democracy is so strong.
Yes.
Come together!
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
A young cricket. You say cricket or bricket?
Bricket.
A young bricket.
It required less lighter fluid when he was a bricket. Now, he's a brick.
You know, when I was growing up, no one barbecued in New York. There was no barbecue.
No Q?
No one was barbecuing. The first barbecue restaurant I ever heard of was a former Met, Rusty Staub.
Yes, Rusty Staub.
Rusty Staub.
Yeah.
He opened up Rusty's.
That's right.
And that really brought barbecue into the mindset of New York,
but
I think.
Didn't people just barbecue outside, Vic?
Not really. It was a California thing.
Well, I also think it was a Midwest thing.
Yeah, Texas,
Midwest.
Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. Not New York.
Memphis,
New York was not
Memphis
barbecuing.
Barbecue. Yeah.
New York was not barbecuing.
Well, that's one of the problems with New York.
Oh, absolutely. But there's no there was problems. But you know what? With Joe and Kamala, I feel good. I feel good.
Are you going to sing again?
Time has come today.
Okay.
Time.
Yeah.
Time.
Yeah, yes.
Time has come today.
It's come today.
Gonna burst into another show tune, Vic?
Yes, Vic.
Listen, whenever I can evoke the Chambers Brothers, you know I will.
Yes.
With this haiku for you at two, by one of the titans of the industry, Sheeky.
Okay. All
and
right.
You've heard it before. I'm bringing back, you know, one of the great ones, because it's such a great day for this country. This is by Sheeky. S-H-I-K-I.
Okay.
Plum blossoms falling on the Koto. Evening moonlight. I'm feeling you. Sheeky.
And Vic, for those of us that are not really aware of the Koto, what is a Koto?
It's a Japanese flute. The Koto, a brilliant instrument, ancient Japanese flute.
I thought it was some sort of house or hut. Plum blossoms are falling on the flute.
Correct. Evening moonlight. I just find that so beautiful, just like today in D.C., a beautiful day.
But no one had a flute there. Well, maybe.
Maybe. A
maybe.
Flute?
Yeah, maybe somebody did in the band.
I think Lady Gaga was rocking a flute. What was that thing? She was great with the anthem, but she was rocking a great piece.
That was an eagle.
Oh, okay. Beautiful.
How could you mistake a flute with an eagle?
I was just so mesmerized.
Ah.
So I also just looked up a koto. It looks more like a string instrument than a flute.
Vic, is it a flute or is it a guitar?
In my research, it is a flute.
Kevin, the koto. Do you blow into it?
Doesn't look. No, it looks like it's a. It's more of a.
Like a
it's more like a
violin.
Violin type than a flute type, unless there are different variations of it. But the ones that I'm seeing here, Vic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, look more like giant like violin type instruments.
Vic, you don't blow into a violin. You blow into a flute.
Salient point, Fred. I'm going with Japanese flute. I'm going Koto Japanese flute.
Okay.
Nonetheless, the plum blossoms fell on it.
It's all about the plum blossoms. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, Fred, you're focusing on the wrong thing.
Forget the koto. It could be any instrument.
Was he playing the instrument at that point, or was he holding the instrument?
The koto was probably near him. Maybe someone had put it down. Maybe someone was playing it, you know, next to Sheeky. Because, you know, they had jam sessions.
With the flute and the violin. They got down, Vic.
They got down, Fred.
Yeah. And these words just struck Sheeky as they were done jamming.
Oh, absolutely. A revelation, epiphany, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Now, it does look like the koto and the flute do work together, synchronously, or whatever the word, you know the word I'm looking for.
So yeah.
A lot of times, people do play the koto and the flute together to make harmonies, it seems like,
from my limited
research here. So they do work together there, Vic, but they're not one and the same, per se.
Grow the mind. That's what this is all about, growing the mind. Planting seeds for the future.
Then, Vic, you accomplished your goal today.
It's lit. Fire! Stories lighting up the sports headlines.
You're walking down the street, you get hit with a koto. That's a personal injury. You got to call Jacob Imrani at 844-24-JACOB.
Accident or injury, call Jacob Imrani, call Jacob.
The koto looks pretty big and cumbersome, Fred, so if somebody picks it up and hits you with it, it's a pretty strong individual.
Wait, that's okay, what I'm
so
saying.
More cello than violin?
Yeah, even more so. Yeah, it's ground. You can't pick it up. Oh. It looks like it's very heavy.
I think it's not even close to a flute. It's not even remotely close. You can't even pick it up.
It's an ancient Japanese flute.
No, it's not. It's not a flute. It's not a piccolo. It's gigantic. And it's a bass that weighs about 100 pounds.
That sounds about right, Fred, actually. It looks like it.
What are you talking about? A flute that's being played by a sumo wrestler? What do you know? I mean, come on.
No, Vic, it's not a flute.
By the way, it's day 11 of the sumo tournament in Tokyo.
Okay, all right. That's good.
Day 11.
Yes. How was your sumo, what's his name? the dominant sumo wrestler?
Oh, Haka Ho.
Haka Ho, is he still balling? What's going on?
He's Haka Ho is out of this tournament.
No, he's not hawking hoes, Fred.
Oh.
He's not in the tournament, Vic?
No, it's wide open.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Daisho actually is leading after 10 days. He's 9-1.
Was Haka Ho ever in it?
No, no.
But when you first talked about it this year, you said he was the favorite. Did he get injured in it?
No, he never entered the tournament.
But that was the name you brought up at the beginning of the tournament.
Because he is a king of sumo. And that's why it's you know, this tournament can be won by a whole lot of guys. It's exciting because it's so open, yeah.
It's probably fair to say Haka Ho is going into the Sumo Hall of Fame, Vic. Right?
Oh, no doubt. 44 championships.
Well, Phillip Rivers does not have 44. He doesn't even have one. But
who's counting? About,
yeah, he was counting, Fred. But announced his retirement today to Kevin Acey of the San Diego Union-Tribune. Covered the Chargers for a long period of time, obviously. He simply texted him, "It's just time." So, Phillip Rivers, drafted in 2004. Great career with the Chargers. Many playoff runs. Obviously never made it to the Super Bowl, but put up phenomenal numbers. If the discussion many people are having is he a Hall of Famer, Fred?
I say put him in. Put him in the Hall of Fame. It's sad he didn't win.
Yep.
And, you know, he did have some wonderful seasons, and he was able to get kind of close. But I think if you look at his body of work and you subtract the last couple of years from it, yeah, Rodney, I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. What do you think?
I think so. You know, I think that, you know, as Eric Dickerson would always say, if you got to think about it, I don't know if he belongs, but there's a lot of guys in now that you got to think about, that it's gotten to that point. And, you know, numbers are speaking louder for guys that have played in the last 20 years than they were in the past. So based on that, yeah, I think so. I'm sure there are guys, we could go through the list of guys that are in that Phillip's got better numbers than. So yeah, I think over his entire career, I'm gonna go yes.
Daggone it! Obviously, his numbers are prolific. I mean, he's fifth in yards. He's fifth in touchdowns. His durability is unbelievable. I think second only to Brett Favre in terms of games played consecutively. I believe with 232 games in a row that Phillip played in a row, and he couldn't move. It's pretty amazing, his durability and his escapability. So for me, it's I'm not even thinking about it. Phillip to Canton, Ohio.
You know, the NBA has had to postpone a number of games recently because of contact tracing or from guys or staffers who have tested positive for COVID-19. And since the NBA says a lot of players have been disregarding new league rules against unnecessary contact on game night specifically, you know, we had the George Hill comment saying, "I'm going to do whatever I want." So the NBA is actually moving team security into the midcourt area to try to dissuade violations. That includes hugging and handshakes between teams. Fred, do you think that'll help?
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
And maybe I don't get this. So, before the game, don't shake anybody's hand.
Yes.
8 minutes later, run into them, sweat on them, knock them down, run right by them, be directly within inches of their face. And that's going to happen for 2.5 hours.
Yep.
But in that 8 minutes before the 2.5 hours begin.
Oh, and the seconds after those 2.5 hours end.
And the seconds after those 2.5 hours end. Don't touch anybody.
Yep. Makes sense to me, right?
It's all optics.
Yep.
I mean, it's foolish. You've already been running around and running into people and touching them, sweating on them, breathing near them. What does it matter after the game, Rodney?
It doesn't. It's like the NFL with the exchanging of jerseys that they banned after games, after you play 60 minutes of in the trenches with somebody, tackling somebody. Same thing with the NBA. It is just the optics, but it just makes it ridiculous. You know, once you leave the court, maybe that's a whole different story. But, you know, before the game, not shaking hands. So you're not going to shake hands, but yet, like you said, you're going to foul guys, sweat on guys. It's just a ridiculous rule that doesn't make any logical sense, Big.
Well, it couldn't hurt.
How could it? Justin Turner playing three innings and then deciding he can't go anymore because the test results came back.
Listen, every encounter is risky, and these aren't just slapping of fives. I mean, these are, you know, players hug each other. There's a genuine love for one another, and they hug it out at the end. So the optics are bad, and the encounters, who knows? To me, if you can limit the encounters, you limit the encounters. This is not going to last forever, but I think you got to pull back and self-sacrifice, you know, some of that love for one another.
I just saw this note a second ago, so we know Carson Wentz, I guess, won the battle between himself and Doug Peterson in Philadelphia. All signs point to him possibly staying, but of course we don't really know exactly what they're thinking. Frank Reich is the head coach of the Colts, and now, of course, they have an opening at quarterback, and he was the offensive coordinator for the Eagles the year they won the Super Bowl. Now, someone did ask Frank Reich whether or not he will be interested in bringing in Carson Wentz or trading for him, and this is according to sources. He didn't say this outwardly, you know, in the public, but the belief is that Frank might not even be interested in bringing Carson Wentz in. Is that even more proof positive that the guy that worked with him for years may not even want him, Fred, if he's available?
Well, yeah, that kind of does speak volumes. Okay, you've worked with him, you know him, and you're going to need a quarterback. And, you know, on paper, when they selected him, they thought very good things of him. He got banged up a lot, but they thought good things of him. And now you're saying you're not interested? Rodney, I think that does say something.
If it's true. Let's start there. If that's, do we hear it out of Frank Reich's mouth? We'll take it with a grain of salt there. But no, that's not out of the realm. There's a lot of guys that are offensive coordinators or defensive coordinators that work with what they have. You know, Frank Reich worked with Doug Peterson and what kind of offense he wanted to implement in Philadelphia, and work within those confines. And then once Frank Reich got his own job, I'm sure there were ideas and things that he wanted to do that were his own. And it goes the same thing for players. Just because you coach a guy at one place as a coordinator, when you're a head coach, you may want to do things differently, and that guy may not fit what you actually ultimately want to do. I mean, it really happens all the time. Same thing with coaches. You know, as an offensive coordinator, you may have a quarterback coach or offensive line coach that you work with at one place, and you would think that you bring that guy with you, but it doesn't always happen that way. You know, it's you want to go in a different direction or a different philosophy. So not out of the realm that happens, but it will be interesting to see, you know, what Indianapolis does. They may move up to try to get somebody.
When did Carson Wentz turn into Josh Rosen?
Whoa.
I mean, this guy's just been banged up. He's had a horrific offensive line. And suddenly he's like undesirable? No, he's still a very desirable commodity in the National Football League. He's a starting quarterback who just needs some help around him. I don't buy into the Frank Reich thing that he wouldn't invite him in if it was possible. Wentz can still play. He just has to stay healthy. Rodney, you know that. You stay healthy, man.
Yeah.
Sky's the limit. Good offensive line, couple of weapons, boom.
And that's what's lining up the headlines.
Kevin's been great.
Folks, make sure you tune into Clubber Basketball tonight. They'll host Sacramento. Adam Auslin will have your pregame at 6, followed by tip-off at 7. Right here on your home of the Clippers, AM 570 LA Sports. And don't miss the 2021 iHeartRadio Podcast Awards. Watch on iHeart's YouTube or Facebook, or listen on the iHeart app. Tomorrow at 9, brought to you by The Real Real. Shop, consign, and repeat. When we come back, Sunday Night Football's Al Michaels will join the show.
Let us give you money. Your chance to win $1,000 is right now. Text the nationwide keyword.
fun to 200-200. You'll get a confirmation text and info. Standard data and message rates apply in this nationwide contest. Once again, that's fun to 200-200. Good luck.
AM 570 LA Sports.
If you missed any of Rogan and Rodney, you can podcast it on the iHeartRadio app.
Rogan and Rodney.
AM 570 LA Sports.
Every two I beat it up. They thinking I'm wiping, deleting them. Oh, wait. Every pints in, call up Ryan. My brother pull like a socket.
Yeah. Rodney Pete, Fred Rogan. On a Wednesday, January 20th, inauguration hump day, Fred. Getting it in.
Getting it in and doing the work today, and it's a treat now to welcome on a good friend of ours from NBC Sports, the voice of Sunday Night Football, a local icon. It's our good friend Al Michaels. And Al, thank you for jumping on today.
Oh, Fred, anytime, man. You guys have the number one show in the market. Yeah, I'm not going to miss up. I'm not going to miss an opportunity to be on the the Rogan and Pete show.
All right.
Don't forget Rodney.
No, I
know. You know what I'm saying?
No, we got
it. Al, we're going to keep that. We're going to keep that for the future reference and use that as our advertising material, if you don't mind.
Not a problem. Just send the check to. I'll tell you when we get off the air.
Okay. Yesterday, Al, out at Dodger Stadium, they actually had a memorial service for Tommy Lasorda, and the Dodgers kept that very quiet. We got the video afterwards, and I thought it was very touching. What are your memories of Tommy Lasorda?
Well, I went back a long way, Fred. I go all the way back to when I started my career doing the Hawaii Islanders back in 1968, 69, and 70. And our big rival in the Pacific Coast League, AAA, was the Dodger Farm Club, the Spokane Indians.
Wow.
And at that time, Spokane had Steve Garvey, Davey Lopes, Bobby Valentine, Bill Russell, Bill Buckner. That turned out to be the Dodgers of the 70s, and a very successful Dodger team, obviously, during that decade. And the manager was Tommy Lasorda. So I got to meet Tommy when he managed that team. And in those years, because of travel, teams would come over not for three games, but for seven. So they'd be there all week. I got to know the players, and I got to know Tommy. So Tommy loves to tell the story, or loved to tell the story. And it was a little bit embellished, but I couldn't hear it enough. And that was that he would call Al Campanis, then the general manager, after every game to report in on how the guys did. Valentine went 2-for-4, Buckner went 1-for-3, whatever. So at the end of one of the conversations, maybe a sixth game of a seven-game series, in the middle of the conversation, Tommy tells Campanis, "Hey, Al, I know you've got Vin Scully. Vinny's the best. But there's a young guy over here. This guy, his name is Al Michaels. He does the games on radio. This guy is really good." So Campanis doesn't respond to it. And they go on. They talk about the other players. And then finally, at the end of the conversation, Campanis says, "Hey, Tommy, this young guy, this Michaels guy, how do you know he's any good?" Tommy said, "I've been thrown out of the last four games. I'm out in the clubhouse listening to him." So the reality of it was, in I think the third game of the series, he got thrown out fairly early, maybe the fourth inning. So they throw him out, and in Hawaii, you could not sneak behind the dugout into a clubhouse and a tunnel like guys do in the major leagues. Here, you'd have to walk across the field all the way out through the center field gate, which was 420 feet away, and the clubhouse was another 100 feet beyond. So you'd walk out, the crowd would serenade you, and you couldn't come back because everybody would see you. So truly, Lasorda is sitting out in the clubhouse listening to KGU radio in Honolulu. So the next night, he's so flipped off, when he brings the lineup card out, he gets thrown out exchanging the lineup card. So now he walks out again. I think the next game he actually did last, and the following game he probably got thrown out maybe in the sixth inning. So the reality was that Tommy must have heard me do, I'd say, approximately 20 innings. And just a little kicker to this story. The guy who threw him out of those games was Bruce Fremming, who would go to the major leagues the following year and wind up doing Major League Baseball for 37 years, which I believe is a record for most consecutive years umpiring.
Wow. Wow, that's an incredible. And I remember though that PCL league, because I grew up in Tucson, and yeah, the Tucson Toros were a part of it. And yes. I remember Albuquerque Dukes and all those teams that would do it. But the Hawaiian Islanders, yes.
Phoenix absolutely. Giants, Eugene Emeralds.
Phoenix right, Giants, Phoenix, yeah. Yep.
The Tacoma Cubs. And then Seattle, the first year I was there, Seattle had not gotten their expansion franchise yet, which eventually went to Milwaukee, then they got the Mariners later on. But Seattle had a team, the Tucson Toros, High Corbett Field in
Tucson. High Corbett,
yeah.
Remember that, Robbie, buddy.
For sure.
Hey, Al, is it safe to say, you know, in L.A., it's the land of stars, whether it be Hollywood, but, you know, Showtime and the Lakers really took it to a whole different level. But when you talk about entertainment value, entertainment in sports, Tommy Lasorda was – people came to see Tommy Lasorda as much as the Dodgers in the 70s.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, he'll forever be intertwined with the Dodgers. Now, the thing I really loved about Tommy is that it was genuine. He had such a love for baseball, such a love for the Dodgers, and he loved being around people. He was gregarious. He was funny. Was Tommy over the top? Of course he was, but that was part of the beauty of Tommy Lasorda. You felt, you know, I think you felt more alive when you were around him, because in all the years I knew him, I really never knew him to have a bad day. I mean, he would, you know, he'd complain or carry on as he did about, you know, when he was asked to describe Dave Kingman's 3-home run performance by Paul Holden, which became one of the great sound bites of all time. But Tommy was a guy you could always count on to be dramatic and up and funny, but it was all true. It was all sincere. And I think what we love in sports, when somebody really loves what they do and you know, they're a part of the fabric of the game itself and of a team, you got to love the person. And that's how I felt and many people felt about Tommy Lasorda.
Al Michaels with us, Fred Rogan, Rodney Pete on AM 570 LA Sports. Rodney, you brought up Showtime, and it got me to thinking that next week, Al, is the anniversary of Kobe Bryant's death. And as a guy that's lived here and been involved and on the national level and local level, what did Kobe Bryant mean to this city, and what did his death mean to this city?
Well, Fred, you know as well as anybody, Rodney, too, that you know, I think upon his death, when you began to think about what he was and who he was and what he did, I mean, that really drove it home. And I think part of it, too, were the horrible circumstances of the way he died. This wasn't, you know, a long battle against cancer or some disease or something. This was, you get into a chopper one morning and you take, you know, you're gone and your daughter's gone and other people have perished as well. And it was so horrible that it was almost unimaginable. And I think at that point, there was an unbelievable outpouring because there's such a shock quotient that's involved in it as well. But then you look back at Kobe, and look, early on, it was kind of crazy, and, you know, he and Shaq kind of imploded. They did win their 3 championships. It probably ended earlier than it should have. You had other issues, obviously, we know about that. But at the end of the day with Kobe, I mean, he got so involved in youth sports and the promotion of girls and women in sport, and that was almost his mission at that particular point. He did a lot of, you know, commercial stuff and things as well on top of that. But I know that the last time I saw him, they asked me, the L.A. Sports Council, to come out to the Rose Bowl, and I taped an institutional with Kobe about girls in sports and how important it was for kids to get into sports. And he was totally invested in that. So, I mean, he matured beautifully. He really did. And I think, you know, he'll be forever loved in the city. And obviously when you saw the ceremony at Staples, that was that was something to remember.
Yeah,
it was incredible. And you know, and as we're coming up on it again, it's going to remind us of all of that. But it was kind of the start out of a just a bad year, and then, you know, the pandemic hit. When you and we're still, it's kind of overlapping into 2021, but when you look about back at the 2020 year in terms of sports, how do you think it's going to be remembered? Because a lot of people talked about, you know, well, is a shortened season in baseball and the bubble in basketball, and is it, you know, is there an asterisk, is there not, all those type of things. How do you feel sports in 2020, the champions, how, what everybody had to go through in 2020 will be remembered?
Rodney, I can only hope that 2020 is a one-off. We're one and done with 2020 because it was tough on every level. And we know what it meant, I mean, worldwide, a complete disaster. To condense it to the world of sports, I think what happened was when you had no sports, everybody was dying for sports. And then they came back, and there was such a proliferation of sports that people are talking about, well, the ratings weren't what they thought they would be. Well, there's so much on right now, and you can't go to the games. So, I mean, to me, I have to read, you know, the show I'm on, Sunday Night Football, I'm reading headlines in some of the entertainment publications basically saying ratings get sacked.
Yeah.
Sunday night down, whatever. A couple of people have asked me about it, you know, over the course of the season. I said, yeah. I said, you know what? We went from number one, we dropped all the way down to number one. So, I mean, it's all relative. There's this proliferation. Anyway, to get back to sports, what, having just done, you know, the NFL this year, and we finished our portion of the schedule with the Baltimore-Buffalo game the other night, not having fans is terrible. And the other night in Buffalo, at least they had 6,700. That's a tenth of capacity, and they sounded like 67,000 and actually jammed some of the Ravens signals at one point. But you know, you look around, and what I would do when I'm doing these games is I thought I was like a horse, and the trainer puts blinkers on me, so I can't look into the infield, and I can't look into the grandstand, and you just concentrate on the game. But, I mean, sitting especially in a place like Seattle, where the joint is wild, it's just crazy up there, and it was empty. We did two games up there. I look around, and I'm going, wait a minute, this is wrong. This is not good. So I can only hope this is a one-off. I give a lot of credit to the leagues for being able to pull this thing off, because especially with football, we know what that is, and there was no bubble, and guys are breathing all over each other, you know, for 3 hours. And I thought when we did the opening game on September 10th, which was Houston to Kansas City, and I know Chris Collinsworth and I were talking about what are the chances that we're going to get to the end of the year when we're supposed to get to the end of the season, and we thought 10%.
Yeah.
So it's turned out to be, you know, so far 100% going into the championship games this weekend, but I think a lot of it had to do with the players and the coaches and all of the people around the teams had to buy into this. It wasn't easy. And we had John Harbaugh the other night because we did the Baltimore game, and we were talking to him in our meeting. And even John was the guy who was very vociferous at the beginning when this all started. And he said, it's too restrictive. This is humanly impossible. We can't get this done. He said that back in July. But then everybody said, you know what, here's what we have to do. It's going to be a real pain in the butt to get a lot of this stuff done. But they all, at least, you know, 95%, 98% of the people bought in, and here we are.
Yeah, and Al Michaels is with us. I want to get your thoughts on the championship games in a second. But to go back to one thing you did say about viewing levels are down for sports and the NFL. And I know people have other options now, and they are able to stream. And do you think, and Al, I don't know this, but do you think, because this is what you do for a living, maybe the focus of the public will change a little bit after this pandemic? And they'll say, you know, sports is good for me when it's good for me, but I do have other options.
That's part of it, Fred. Also, I look very skeptically, almost cynically, at the ratings. I'm not sure I believe any of this stuff to begin with. You know, the Super Bowl is watched by 100 million people. That means 230 million people are not watching it. I guess. I don't know. It just seems to me sometimes I'll do a game and the audience is 15 million and maybe it's because a lot of my friends and the people I know are in the world of sports, but it seems like everybody saw it.
Yeah.
And I'm going, wait a minute, this is 15 million is 5% of the country. It just seems like 95% of the country, that's too much of a number that's not watching the game. Anyway, this is a long-winded thing about the cynicism and skepticism that I have toward the ratings, and a lot of people in this business do right now. I don't know what to believe. And also, people are in and out of the games, and they can watch it on their devices. This is not like, you know, 30 years ago, yeah, when you sit in your easy chair with a beer and watch the whole thing beginning to end. People are coming in and out of the game. So, you have to show me something that has an increase in viewership, you know, unless it's something really tiny and it goes from, you know, 3 million people to 4 or 5 million people. But I think sports, I don't want to say as healthy as it's ever been, because obviously it's not. But we're to the point, there hasn't really been that much of a diminishment, in as far as I can tell, in people's love for sports. So there's a lot of, we've been through a crazy time. As I say, let's just hope this is a one-and-done thing, because this would be a very difficult thing to repeat again another season.
All right, so now we've got the championship games this weekend. You've seen the league. You know the teams. What do you think?
Can't wait to watch them. I know that. So you've got Green Bay and Tampa Bay. Yeah, it's terrific. It's going to be a wonderful game to watch. Aaron Rodgers, to me, he's as big a story as anything in the league. He's been so good for so long. It's as good a year as I think he's ever had. And I keep going back to draft night. And we talked to him about it. I told the story on the air when we had him against Tennessee in Week 16. And he's sitting there, and, you know, he'd like him to pick a wide receiver. He could use another guy to go with Devontae Adams or maybe a running back or an offensive lineman. No, what do? They pick a quarterback.
Yeah.
And it was so similar to when, you know, Favre was there in 05 and they picked Rodgers, and you begin to wonder, what are they doing? Are they pushing me out? Do you begin to have a little bit of self-doubt? And Aaron told us in our meeting, he said, look, I could have let bitterness and negativity seep in. And the first thing he did is he went to the pantry, as he said, and he got like 4 fingers of tequila. So that was the first thing he did when Jordan Love got drafted. But he then became incredibly resolute. He said he worked out as hard as he ever has, despite the fact, you know, they didn't have the OTAs and the regular stuff, but he did it on his own. And now he's got, I mean, to me, he looks like an orchestra conductor out there. I mean, he is in total control. So you've got him. Brady, of course, is simply amazing to be able to play that well at that age, doing it differently than Rodgers is. You know, guys, you think back to, and we did the game on a Sunday night when they got killed by New Orleans. It was like 33-3 at the half. Brady looked terrible. The whole narrative the next week is, oh, you know, Brady and Arians are not getting along, which turned out to be a bunch of junk, because here they are in the NFC Championship game. So I don't think it gets a lot better than that. And Buffalo and Kansas City, well, the whole thing is, what about Mahomes right now?
Yeah, yeah.
Is he going to play? I mean, maybe we won't know until the weekend. That could make, obviously, a heck of a difference. But I thought with Buffalo, we did them the other night, and I know Chris and I both felt the key to the game was going to be Buffalo's defense stopping Baltimore's offense, which they did a pretty good job of since they held them the 3 yeah. points. You had that big interception, you know, in the third quarter. So I think it's the same thing. How's that Baltimore defense going to hold up against Kansas City's offense?
Yeah, I agree. When you look at that game last week with Brady and Breeze, and, you know, obviously two Hall of Famers, I thought that Brady looked like he got new life going to Tampa, and he looked younger, whereas I thought Drew Breeze started to look his age. And not just that in that game, but I think towards the latter part of the season started to look his age. And I didn't think that the Tampa Bay, I always said, I give him a year. Brady's going to need a year to get there, get acclimated, no off season. But here we are, and they're in the championship game. I still think Green Bay's got the edge, but I thought Tampa Bay was a year away. What do you think about that with Breeze? It just felt like it was his time. that he had gotten older, but Brady, boy, it looks like he still could go another 3 years.
Yeah. You know, Ronnie, it's so true because, you know, Drew didn't look as good as he has in years past, especially down the stretch. Now, that night that we had him in Tampa, when they blew the Bucks out, he looked pretty good, and Brady didn't look very good.
Right.
And then it kind of flipped going down the stretch. So, you know, for Breeze, so much of it was being able to have Alvin Kamara, but you're right, he didn't look quite as sharp. Brady looked close enough. I mean, he's doing it a little bit differently than he did in New England, but it's one of those things where he's getting the job done. You can just feel it the way he is orchestrating the game. I talked about, you know, Rodgers being an orchestra leader. Brady has been as well. You know, it's a funny thing, though. You look back to certain points in recent history, and everybody was saying, well, you know, Brady can't last. And then all of a sudden he would last, and he'd hoist the Lombardi trophy or come close enough to it. And he may do this again. But, you know, I go back, guys, to not that many years ago. He looked terrible, Brady did, in a Monday night game against Kansas City. They got blown out. And that's the famous game where, after the game, everybody's asking Belichick, isn't it time for Garoppolo to take over? Think about that. Isn't Jimmy Garoppolo, he's ready. He's ready to go. And that's when Belichick kept saying, we're on to Cincinnati. We're on to Cincinnati.
Right.
Typical Bill, of course. He's not going to go back. He goes forward. And then we did the Sunday night game was Cincinnati at New England the next week. And they lit him up. It was Brady, it was quintessential Tom Brady. So guys are going to have their little swale periods, their off periods. Brady did this year. But you're right, Ronnie, in terms of, you know, Brees, Drew just didn't look like Drew Brees coming down the stretch. But, hey, he got him to the Elite Eight.
Al Michaels with us. And, Al, we appreciate your time. But before we let you go, congratulations on the Frick Award. What did that mean to you? I mean, you've won everything. But what did this one mean to you?
You know, Fred, it was totally unexpected because I haven't done a baseball game in 25 years, World Series of 95. It was, frankly, thrilling. It meant a lot because I built my career around baseball. As a kid, you know, I'm starting in Hawaii and, you know, the Lasorda story and that. And I think a lot of people know me for football, obviously, for, you know, the NFL now for 35 years, for a hockey game in 1980 and some other stuff. And they don't think about baseball. But coming out of nowhere and getting this award just brought back this tremendous flood of memories. And to get these calls, and speaking about Tommy called me from the hospital. And his man, Felipe Ruiz, handed the phone to him. Tommy wants to talk to you. And this was maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago. He didn't sound very good, but you could tell he just remembered the Hawaii years and Spokane. And we had a wonderful conversation. It was so thrilling. And then I got another call from Vin Scully, who, of course, is the greatest of all time. Steve Garvey called me. So Tony Kubek, who I did the World Series
with
Kirk Gowdy, and Tony in 72. So I'm getting all these calls. Hawk Harrelson, who won the award last year. So it was fantastic to reconnect with so many of the guys that meant so much to me, you know, early in my career. So I'm just hopeful that, you know, Cooperstown, I want to be there. And, you know, I just hope this isn't virtual and that I can show up in upstate New York in July. What a thrill, though, Fred.
Al, thanks for the time. Congratulations on the award. You are the very, very best, and we really appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. Love being on the show with you.
And we love that, Al, you were on the show with us today. Truly do appreciate that. We're back to wrap it up after this.
Here's Aaron Jones right up the middle of the war. Jones makes a cut.
From the Packers and Bucs.
Touchdown, Buffalo.
To the Bills and Chiefs. The best coverage of the conference championship is on AM 570 LA Sports. Title game coverage is presented by your LA Chargers. Get your season tickets today starting as low as $83. Visit Chargers.com for details. If you missed any of Rogan and Rodney, you can podcast it on the iHeartRadio app.
Rogan and Rodney.
AM 570 LA Sports.
We want to put a grand in your hand, $1,000. Listen for the cue to text for your chance to let us do it. Weekdays at 15 past the hour from 7:15 to 4:15. Details at am570lasports.com. Adam and Kevin, great job today. Thank you. Short show for us tomorrow, only 2 hours. Rodney will talk to you then. Hard part about it, brother got smoked by a fiend. Trying to floss on a blind to a broken man's dream.